You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 15 August. Chinese new house price data came out this morning, down 2.8%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Skoglo, PSG, Old Oak. We had the Standard Bank results. And we also had a horror True Words update. That, of course, following the Fashini Group of last week. Vernon Sinden from Investec Logistics. New transshipment model coming into effect. Goods to be routed via Europe en route to the US. What's happening here? And some thoughts on the valuations. They always matter in the end. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, City of Joburg to repeal private CCTV bylaws. Three organizations legally challenging the bylaw believes it's unconstitutional and invalid. Business Day, NUMSA signs a two-year pay deal with pharmaceutical sector bosses. Other benefits of the wage agreement include extension of maternity leave from 4 to 6 months. Morning markets. The US was mixed but flat. S&P up 0.03%. NASDAQ off a little under a tenth of a percent. The East mostly green. Sydney a third of a percent higher. Tokyo up 0.9%. Hong Kong is down 1.1%. Tencent 0.7% higher. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures is your exception. 3,383. Brent 66.76. Platinum 1,364, palladium 1,153, the rand 1,759, bitcoin 119,100, and top 40 opening call looking for a green open 140 points or about 0.15% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning over Skulklo, PSG, Old Oak. Skulk, appreciate the early morning time. Standard Bank, second of our big banks to report. And I got to say, they're looking at a GDP growth of sub 1%. They're managing to grow their HEPS at, 8% there. They've got a ROE trending higher. They've got cost to income below 50%. All in all, a good set of numbers and non-interest revenue up 15%. Man, they are making bank on fees.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. They did really, really well. And when this results came out yesterday, the first reaction of Mr. Market was just unbelievable. We had Standard Bank up on one stage at 6%. I think it closed up at 3%. But it's a crazy market, Simon. And not talking about local market, I'm talking markets in general. We just came out of the US reporting season, and companies that sort of brought these sort of it was fine results, they got hammered. They really, really market reacted extremely negative. And then companies that performed well, they were really, really rewarded with great, you know, let's call it price movement. And we've seen it. 2 weeks ago, you and I had this conversation on Nedbank. Yeah. Nedbank came out, and it was sort of we're looking at an ROE of between 14 and 15%. The outlook weren't looking too phenomenal. And the share price got hammered. The price to book remained around about the one time, and you and I had this conversation. I said, well, I think they justify that one. Yesterday, Standard Bank came out. Wow. ROE, 19.1 times, and they said they're going to maintain. They're going to maintain this, let's call it 17% to 20% ROE. Price to book, let's call it the NAV went up to 158.29. That put them on the price to book to at 1.5 times. And really, I do think that is justified. You can see this bank has done phenomenal things within. It's not just interest, not just the pure banking stuff. It is really all the financial services, all these other investments also is yielding great performances. And just as a matter of interest, I mean, we need this. I mean, when we look at the year-to-date for our banks has been under immense pressure. Let's start at the bottom. I mean, just for the listeners out there, when we look at the JSE All Share, currently as we sit here, they're sitting with a year-to-date performances of 23.6%. Yes, 23.6% year-to-date performance on the JSE. When you look at the banks, Nedbank currently is minus 12%. APSA, 5%. Investec, 5%. Now, Capitec and Standard Bank's the only ones that's doing well. Still not yielding the type of performances we've seen on the market. Capitec, 18.8%. And Standard Bank, after yesterday's move, 16.5%. I thought it was really good. I was really happy. And I must admit, the outlook, and not the outlook on the South African economy, because they're only seeing us growing at 0.9%. The outlook for Standard Bank does seem to look good for the next, let's call it, 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, and to your point, they're not expensive. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, price to book 1.5, a dividend yield of around 6, not bad at all. The flip side was Truworths. Now, we had the Fashini Group just a week ago. That massively disappointed the market. Truworths came along and much did the same. And it was, I mean, a weak H2, but just not a thrilling set of numbers at all. We're just not buying clothes.
We're not buying clothes from the usual suspects, Simon. I mean, I sat at the office the other day and I just looked at some of these packages that came in, these delivery packages. Mm-hmm. It's Temu, it is Shein. It's all these, let's call it, I want to say, unusual suspects. The offer that currently South Africans got, it's a massive offer. And I think the competitive in this market is really, really unbelievable. Let's just put it in perspective. I mean, 2024, we went in, we were expecting interest rates to be declining, and they did. We were expecting a nice, you know, input from the two-pot system, and that saw the likes of Truworths in 2024 growing 50%, yeah. Pepco 50%, Fushini Group 50%, Mr. Price close to 100%. This year, it's like you mentioned, just been a horror show. You know, the Fushini Group is down 34%, True is down 33%, Mr. Price down, you know, 27%. Actual results, I thought, looked very, very bad. I mean, they mentioned that the interest rates didn't really help them enough, and we now know that the two-pot system clearly did not put feet in the likes of the Truworths and the Fashinis. I was quite surprised to see the UK operation, that office group. Mm-hmm. I've been quite critical on that company for many, many years, worried that it might be a David Jones Country Roads effect that Woolworths had. But, I mean, that was sort of the saving grace for Truworths. I mean, their sales were up 9.7% in pound terms. And, it really looked good. It was the African operation, you know, down, or let's call it flat sales, you know, on the African operation, which make up 70% of Truworths, that really, you know, sunk the ship. I didn't like their outlook either. I mean, they did mention things should look better in a macroeconomic environment that improves. But we know now, if we look at the likes of Nedbank, they said only 0.9% for this year. Standard Bank, only 0.9%. We now know in an economy that's not growing like it should be doing, and we're not talking about 1% or 1.5%, we should be growing 3.5% and plus. If we're not going to be growing like that, oh man, your Fashini Groups and Truworths are going to bring out these type of results.
Yeah, it's that lack of growth. And yeah, the two-pot was lacking. Last year was epic fun, but this year, I suppose it's that cliche, right? The chickens, as they say, are coming home to roost. Skoklo, PSG Old Oak, appreciate the early morning time. It's our poll today on Twitter and LinkedIn. There's no one buying clothes out there. Or as Skok suggests, maybe we're buying them out of China. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Vernon Sinden, head of logistics at Investec. Vernon, appreciate the time. South African exporters, importers, significant shift in trade logistics. This kicks in October. Transshipment model comes into effect. Goods bound for the US rerouted through key European consolidation hubs
before reaching the US. Two questions to start with. Is this both and sea freight? And secondly, why the change?
Thanks, Simon, and thanks for the chat and hello to your listeners. And I think just to touch on that, it's mainly for ocean freight for now.
Mm-hmm.
And the change comes into effect from October. And the reason why I say that is because Maersk, generally that have a direct sailing to the US East Coast ports, is taking out their trade routes and going via Europe. But that being said, it's not that we're not going to have any kind of route into the US.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see that MSC is also going to have their trade route from South Africa into the US. And the talk is that they're additionally going to add some additional vessels as well.
Okay, so it's not a fundamental change. It's importantly, it's not anything to do with tariffs. Great to not to have to chat about that. And this must create some opportunity. I mean, this shift to Europe is not insignificant. Going through the European hubs, I imagine there must be, I mean, I'm thinking products. I'm thinking maybe even rates in a sense that could benefit local business.
Yes, I mean, if you're talking exports, I mean, that's where I think there could be a little bit of disruptions, because the reason why I say that, you know, the transit time through to Europe, going via Europe to the US or going to Europe, we have to look at commodities. What kind of products are we looking at exporting into the European market? You know, we look at automotive, we look at perishables. That might be products that we could generally export into Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And these are products that have been exported into the US. I mean, US is our largest trading partner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the second largest trading partner. And third to that is Germany. So it just makes sense that we do partner up with Germany. We look at bilateral trade agreements with Europe and see what products we can leverage on and exporting through to that region.
Absolutely. An opportunity coming. And in essence, in the world of tariffs and everyone looking to new trade partners, this really could help strengthen relationships with the European freight forwarders, logistics and the like, and sort of rise our visibility as a market into Europe.
Yes. I mean, I think if you're looking at building partnerships with freight forwarders or local service providers, I think the first thing that they look at is volume, right? And they look at predictability. And I mean, if you're looking at predictability, you know, we don't want to make assumptions. We have to look at data that we have had in the past.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you're talking from a rate level perspective, that's what the freight forwarders are looking for in terms of volumes, predictability, and then they'll sign like a longer term rate validity with you instead of it being spot, you know, so we can look at it at a quarterly basis or a yearly basis. But what they want from exporters or importers is some sort of forecast or volumes to make those kind of deals.
And what about, and you mentioned it, it's sort of the whole idea is going to create some challenges with inventory planning, ordering cycles to this new schedule. I mean, in essence, it's a change, but firstly, get ahead of it, and it's going to need to be sort of smoothed out and sorted.
Yeah, so I think, again, we have to look at the data, you know, and we have to look at last year's data and, you know, we have to have some sort of predictability. Otherwise, we're making assumptions and it's opinions, you know. So we're looking at suppliers and we have to look at production costs and, of course, you know, consumer behavior. What we're seeing in South Africa, if you're talking from an import perspective, we're going into peak season now, so the volume should be increasing. But, you know, what we have seen is that we're going to early peak because of what we've learned. And obviously, I'm talking back in COVID days, where we paid quite expensive, you know, school fees, where inventory is being imported in advance, but then, of course, you know, then they're holding stock, which is not ideal because there's a cost to that. So what we're seeing is volumes are decreased, and, you know, consumers or importers in South Africa are ordering stock just in time. They're trying not to hold high stock inventory levels.
Is that just in time? I mean, it was one of the, you mentioned COVID there. One of the things with COVID was a sort of a move away from a just-in-time supply chain to, some people have called it just in case. In other words, onshoring and the like. Does that suggest, can we really put a pin in it and say the logistic challenges and supply chain bottlenecks from COVID are fully behind us?
Yes and no, if I can say it like that. And the reason why I say that is because, again, we go back to the data and we go back to the analytics. If we look at what we experienced years ago with COVID and what we're seeing now, of course, you know, the behavior and supply chain has shifted dramatically. So I think we've learned from that. And, you know, the shipping lines have also learned from that, where we're talking about when we go into peaks. Of course, we're not going to see the kind of rate levels that we saw during COVID just yet. And I don't think anytime soon, unless there's a major, major disruptions. But yeah, I think that is in the past. But a lot of learnings came out of it. And then I think that's why a lot of supply chain and behavior from importers and, you know, customers have changed.
Yeah, we're smarter for it. It was a horrible way to get smarter, but we are smarter for it. And that's probably doing us a lot better. A last question. We're 6 weeks out from this. We've talked around the speed to market process. Is our local industry ready for it? Because this could create some challenges in what is going to be a challenging year with tariffs already. Are our exporters ready?
Yes. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, I can only talk about what we know now already and what's been announced in the media, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the G20 is coming up. We've seen Steenhuisen, he's trying to make bilateral deals with China. Yeah, so in the past where we've seen exports going through to the US from a perishable perspective and automotive, you know, and with the tariff that's come into effect from August, of course, we're needing to find and diversify and find new trade partners. And this is something that I think that we're doing now. And those are the conversations that we're having now. But again, it's very fluid. It can change. But the thing is, you know, when we come to the G20, I think that's when a lot of the deals are going to be signed. But preempting, the conversations are happening now. So that's very positive.
Yeah. And I take your point. It is fluid. I mean, that's probably the word of the year for 2025. And let's see what comes out of the G20. We'll leave it there. Vernon Sinden, Head of Logistics, Investec. Appreciate the time.
The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Some thoughts from me on valuations. And at points in the market cycle, they don't matter. But in the end, they absolutely do matter. And I was thinking back, Pete Flynn was writing in his weekly newsletter yesterday about Palantir, and I'll get to that in a second. But it got me thinking, the first time I bought Capitec, it was in a PE of about 100 times, which is a crazy number. But I remember it was growing at 70-80% a year. So in a sense, it grew into that valuations over the years. And in the case of Capitec, it's worked well. There were periods when the stock went absolutely nowhere. Sometimes it would do that for a year or more. But over the long ride, the pressure really was on Capitec to keep growing those earnings, no stumbles, and they did it. They absolutely did. But there was, make no mistake, risks there that over the 20 years, they managed to keep on growing. One example that I cannot make any sense of is Costco in the US. It's kind of like the macro globally. It's a bulk buying club. In the case of Costco, it's $100, $150 a year to belong to them. And they'll sell you everything. At one point, they were selling gold bars hand over fist. So nice business, nice model. PE of 50 with low double-digit earnings growth. I mean, that is just, it makes no sense whatsoever. And eventually, something has to give in that sort of scenario. You've got a high PE, low growth, either price down, either earnings boom, and I don't see how that happens, or price flat for a few years as the earnings catch up. But really, Costco should be, I don't know, a 20 PE business, a 15, not a 50. So then we get to Palantir. And I'll quote what Pete Flynn said. Now trades at an 80 times forecast revenue for the coming year. No big tech company has come close to that in the past 25 years. Tesla and Alphabet managed to achieve peak valuation of around 20 times their revenue. In other words, Palantir is in a rarefied stratosphere which no one has ever been to before. They have no profit. That forward PE is around 250. EV sales is 123. But they are expected to grow, but 50%. Now, you know, let's say they do 3 years of 50% growth, which is not what the forecast is. It's expected to tail off in the years ahead. That's still a PE of 150. That is still a crazy, crazy number. 50% growth, maybe you could do a PE of, I don't know, 100, maybe more, but 250? The numbers don't add up. Now, however, don't get me wrong. Market loves this stock. Growth potential is absolutely great. 50%. Off a low base, but 50%. And in this go-go market, there's no worries. But one day, the market isn't so go-go. And then what? Well, that is when valuations start to matter again. We saw it in the dot-com. Microsoft in January 2020 was in a PE of 55, and it was 2015 before the stock price got it back above those 2000 levels. So the go-go money we see right now, it's going to send stocks to insane levels. And to be clear, we can make some serious money along the way. But as the saying goes, stay close to the door, because all businesses eventually mature and valuations eventually do matter. That's it for today. I was chatting with Kenyon Yoni yesterday from Scope Prime, another strong Capitec trading update. The stock is expensive. Price to book is over 6. PE is mid-20s compared to what we were talking around with Standard Bank with Skulk a moment ago. It's expensive. It's growing nicely. We asked if you held it. Just over half said no, you just watch in awe. A quarter saying no, valuation is scary. The rest said yes, expensive, but awesome. Have your vote. Have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, if you like listening to Skulk on Fridays, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.